Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm here with Miles O'Brien. Once again, Celeste Headlee is home recovering from a terrible case of laryngitis.
Yes, I guess on this Thanksgiving Eve, I'm kind of like a leftover guest host, right?
We're glad to have you. But let's get right to the top story this morning. The president yesterday stepped into a gaggle of reporters and announced that next week the decision is to be announced on the strategy in Afghanistan. The discussion is finished. And here was part of what he had to say.
After 8 years, some of those years in which we did not have, I think, either the resources or the strategy to get the job done, it is my intention to finish the job.
A clear intention there from the commander-in-chief, but what is the job and what does it mean to actually finish it? Joining us once again, David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner in the New York Times. He's also the author of The Inheritance, The World Obama Confronts, and The Challenges to American Power. We've also assembled a bit of a panel here to take a look from a kind of roundtable perspective what we think is going on in Afghanistan, what an endgame might actually look like. Charlie Sennett is with us, a friend of The Takeaway, executive editor and founder of GlobalPost.com, on the line from Boston. Good morning, Charlie.
Morning, John.
And Nadir Attash, a former Afghan government official and author of Turbulence, The Tumultuous Journey of One Man's Quest for Change in Afghanistan. He joins us from Virginia. Nadir, good morning.
Good morning.
So, David, let me begin with you. First of all, the number that seems to be circulating of troops that Obama will be sending in addition to the troops that are already there is on the order of 30 to 34,000. Can you confirm that, or does that jive with what you're hearing?
Well, close. What we put in this morning's paper is 25,000 to 30,000. Now, partly this is, I think, an effort to make the first digit a two, you know, like those ads.
Right.
This is only $29.95.
Right.
So I think you'll see it close to the 30 number. A point I made in this morning's Times as well is you can do these numbers, John, any way you want to do them. For example, if you announce combat troops, that leaves you open to add in additional support troops or trainers, most of whom are combat troops anyway, later on. And, of course, the president will likely be saying that he's going to reassess this in the summer. So there'll be some room to move the numbers at that time as well. Just as a caution, early in the year when he added troops, early in his presidency, he said 17. It ended up that 17,000. He's ended up being it being 21,000.
Interesting. It's David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, the New York Times. Nadir Attash, how are the Afghan people likely to view an outline of an end game by Barack Obama next week, if that's what he indeed spends much of his time doing in his speech?
I think this announcement, of course, this is an advance announcement without fully benefiting from the details, but this early announcement I don't think will be well received by the Afghan people, because I think what we may have done is turn this war of necessity into a perpetual and open-ended war, finishing the job. I think that really is bothersome. Especially it may de-incentivize President Karzai's reform agenda, because he will have no incentive to really work hard on the reform agenda that he was not willing and wholehearted to begin with. And also, I think that I don't think that the views of Afghans have been properly portrayed in this decision-making process.
All right, interesting. Charlie Sennett, executive editor and founder of GlobalPost.com, you heard Nadir Attash there saying that the Afghan people aren't likely to view a finish-the-job speech with high regard. But how do you incentivize the Hamid Karzai government to deliver what you need to deliver and talk seriously about an endgame in a speech next week? It's kind of a risk, wouldn't you say?
I think it's a huge risk. I mean, how you incentivize the Karzai government is one of these big looming questions. But I think the even harder one is, how are you going to sell this to the American public? David said they've kind of done some alchemy with the price tag, maybe by putting it at 29,000 instead of 30,000. But you have to do an incredible job selling this if it's going to succeed. And if the president gives the address as is expected on Tuesday, it's going to have to be part resolve, part exit strategy,
part regional balance. It's a really tough sell, I think, and fateful and consequential. And I think it's the most fateful decision he's made in foreign policy in his presidency. And I think it's very much fraught with peril.
David Sanger, you mentioned Winston Churchill's speech back in the 40s where he suggested, give us the tools, we'll finish the job. Let's put this in some historical context. During the Bush years, it was all about not signaling to the enemy deadlines and timetables. We're not going to say what the end game is. What precedent is there in American history of literally outlining some sort of, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, and then it's going to be done?
Well, you know, it would be a wonderful thing to be able to do if you weren't so reliant on partners. But in this particular case, we have two major partners, Afghanistan and Pakistan. And while the Obama administration is new to trying to coax these along, some of us spent 8 years watching a previous administration try to do this, and there are a few lessons from that. The first is, I think the point about incentives to Karzai is very critical, because the U.S. has already said this is only going to work if Karzai cleans up his act, ends corruption, and actually works hard to train an Afghan army. The words I'm looking for next week are the "and then what" words, which is, if Karzai doesn't do any of that, what are we going to do? Pull the troops out? Well, you know, the U.S. government's position has been that the troops are there for American security, that not that they are there for Afghan security. Hmm. And similar problem with the Pakistanis. The Pakistani government has said that it would go after the Taliban and al-Qaeda, but so far the Taliban and al-Qaeda that they've gone after are the ones that are threatening the Pakistani government, not the one that's operating in Afghanistan.
All right, David Sanger, Chief Washington Correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. Thanks so much. We're going to finish up here now with Nadir Attash, former Afghan government official. Nadir, do you expect the president to speak about possibly working in a counterinsurgency way with the Taliban in addition to the Karzai government, possibly trying to turn people on the ground in local villages?
I don't think that that strategy would be fruitful if we do not have a competent Afghan partner whereby all the Afghans rally behind that government. And I think this announcement works against that objective, and Karzai would not have a high incentive to ensure that he has a competent and corrupt-free government so that the people can rally around that government.
All right, a great point. Nadir Attash is a former Afghan government official. Final thought from Charlie Sennett, executive editor and founder of Global Post. Just a few seconds, Charlie. What do you think? Working with the government and the Taliban, or it'll be just talking about the Afghan government?
I think he's going to have to find a way to work with the Taliban and go toward what he originally talked about, which is finding the reconcilables among the Taliban to bring them into the fold. This is an incredibly hard job he has ahead of him. Tuesday is going to be a very tough sell to a very skeptical worldwide audience.
And we'll be all listening. Charlie Sennett, executive editor and founder of GlobalPost.com.